This is 8 Second Rule, the podcast about attention-based marketing where we talk about getting, holding on to, and developing the attention of your ideal audience. You've got 8 seconds. What are you going to do with it? All right, 8 Second Rule. I have set up the beginning of this one a little bit different because my conversation was a little bit long with Jesse B. Good. This is Mark R. Morris Jr., the bull rider of attention-based marketing. And I got a chance to speak to another dad of 8 the other day who happens to be in customer service. In fact, he has served over 1 million customers in his life and wrote a book about it. So he is going to share with us some customer service tips that he feels like would come in useful to people who are building their personal brands on social media and in content marketing. And that is something that he's doing himself. So I'm going to take him at his word because he's doing a pretty good job of it. And I'm just going to put this conversation in here where you guys can hear it. And hopefully you'll get a lot out of it. I know that I did. I had a good time. Jesse, thanks for coming on again. And so with no further ado, here is Jesse B. Good. All right, so 8 Second Rules. This is Jesse B. Good, right? Am I getting that right?
That's correct.
And our first introduction was me cracking a joke about the old song Johnny B. Good, and he said that was his dad, I think, or something.
Yeah.
So, and I had to make sure he was old enough to understand the joke, because once you get up past 40, you'll understand this. But cultural references, they shift like quicksand. It's And it seems like they shift faster these days because we're cranking out so much stuff. But so anyway, this is Jesse. He tell us what you do, Jesse.
Yeah, so I do a couple of things. During the day, I am a customer experience manager for a company that does software asset management consulting. By night, when I'm not fighting crime in my Batman suit, I do customer experience consulting, training, speaking. Anything to do with customer relations is really my passion. I love taking care of customers, making them happy, and I love being able to work on any piece of that journey is fun and exciting to me.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that I wanted to get you on, was to talk to the idea of user experience in the realm of attention-based marketing and kind of how people can have that mindset when they start thinking about their approach to content and their personal brand and things of that nature. So, but before we do that, you have 8 kids like I do, right?
Yes, that's right.
And so what are the ages?
The youngest is 2, oldest is 16. So they're all right about 2 years apart.
Wow, and are they, so is everybody home from school these days?
We have a hodgepodge of some are doing school, some are doing online school, some are just doing homeschool.
Yeah,
all over the place. It's just kind of by kids' age and preference and what fits their learning needs.
Sure. Yeah, that's kind of us too. I think everybody will be back in traditional school coming around whenever we feel like it's safe. Our governor wants to cram them all into the classroom now, but I'm not. Oklahoma's not doing so well with the whole COVID situation at the moment. So, yeah. But anyway, yes, that's cool, man. Mine are older, but yeah, so we have some similar experience there for sure. How many boys, how many girls do you have?
So we have 6 boys and just the 2 girls. So we had a girl first, and then we had the 6 boys all right in a row.
Wow.
Yeah, so she was pretty convinced she was never going to get a sister. And I never took a picture, never took pictures of my wife in the delivery room. That was something we decided we didn't want to do.
Yeah.
One picture I wish I had was just her face when we had that 8th baby and said, that wish I had a picture of her face, but, you know, that she got another girl.
I would imagine so. Yeah, I'm the oldest of 5 boys, and there were 2 girls at the tail end. Okay. So my mom really, you know, she was very patient. She prayed a lot. She just held on until finally she got them. So yeah, the two youngest are my baby sisters. So of course they're all over 30, well over 30, and have their own families now. But
yeah.
All right. So let's dig into this. What I asked you to just kind of think about that and bring us something good. So what you got for us?
Yeah, so I kind of just throughout the week since we messaged each other, just have written down some tips and some things that I saw, and we can dig in however deep you'd like to into some of these.
Sure.
The first thing I think is important is to know who your audience is and who you're targeting, especially on social. You need to know who your audience is. But that also means knowing who your audience is not. I know for me, for a long time, any connection request that came through, I would accept those connection requests because, we want to build the numbers, we want to build the audience, whatever. More lately, I've realized that when that financial planner, says, oh, hey, I see we went to the same school, I'm interested in contacting with other alumni, and I know that the next day that pitch is coming, it's not worth it to me to connect with that guy because he's not really part of my audience. He's looking to sell to me, which is fine. If he wants to sell socially, that's cool. I have no problem with that. But I'm just saying for my needs and my intents, he's not good for my audience and the people I'm trying to target.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. Just consider, why would you want to connect with somebody? How is your message useful to them? What are your thoughts there?
I think that's great. I agree with you 100% on some of that. Social selling is more selling than it is social. It almost becomes predatory after a while. Seriously. And when you're releasing that into your audience, I kind of take it seriously because I'm building, man, I don't want to call myself a thought leader for God's sake, but I'm building a following here. And so people trust my reputation. And so anyone that I turn loose into that pool, I'm not saying I'm their guardian or whatever, but at the same time, I do feel I have some responsibility because if they're going to be commenting on my stuff and engaging with people that I trust, I want to know that it's somebody who's not going to be out there, unscrupulously selling to people who don't have my imperviousness to sales.
Sure.
I won't buy anything if I don't want it. That's just, unless you're really, really, really nice and it's super cheap. It's like, yeah, I'd rather give you some money than, disappoint you at this point.
Well, I've got something cheap to sell you then.
Do you? Okay.
I appreciate your thoughts there. And I think it's important as you are putting together, speaking to social specifically, I had an article come up in my feed last night and it said something like, in case you missed it. And the article was something about tips to build a killer profile on LinkedIn. Articles like this are a dime a dozen in my mind. I mean, you can go out there, you can Google that, you can read the instructions, put together a killer profile. I think that is important. It's important to know that LinkedIn is no longer just the online resume. You're building your personal brand. And I think I know some people that almost consider it to kind of be their sales page. But I think the mistake that a lot of people make is that they think once they put together the perfect profile that the sales should just start pouring in. And that's as far from the truth as you can get. The real key is you have to engage with others and create conversation with people. And I've noticed, you and I were just talking about posting schedules and I've been for several months posting every weekday. Just with the new year, I've started even posting on weekends as well. But I've noticed that when I see jumps in how many people are viewing my profile, it's not from my consistency in posting. It's been from the more that I'm commenting and making interactions with other people is when more people are looking at who I am and what I'm putting out there.
Yeah, I think that's true. I find that to be true too. it's interesting to kind of note that as I've been doing this, just crazy amount of posting over the last 50 days now, I guess, getting close to that, that some things really take off and then some things just sit there,
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to see how the stuff that gets a lot of views decays quickly sometimes. So the engagement on it may not be as high, a lot of eyeballs, but not as many conversations. And that's for sure. Really the sweet spot for me, the secret sauce is the conversations. Cause I think that that's where I do use LinkedIn as my sales page, and I do it fairly successfully. Sure. And I know a lot of people don't think you can do that without, you know, doing the inbox messaging thing or buying leads or, but man, I told somebody the other day, I said, you know what? My process is really, I just move the closing process out of the boardroom onto the newsfeed. By the time someone hits my inbox to ask me if they're, you know, if for a project, it comes down to price, availability, and style. It's not about job or not. So you cut out so much because they already trust your expertise if you do it right. So that's my thinking on that anyway.
No, I totally agree. And I think that goes right along. It's a good segue. One of the things I had written down was just delivering value in content. I know a lot of people are concerned, you know, oh, well, I charge people or people pay me for my knowledge. And if I put it out there on LinkedIn, what am I going to sell, right? And I have a buddy that he and I, our joke used to be that our greatest ideas are lost on the minds of those who are not the greatest. Meaning that, you know, those are my ideas, that those are my thoughts, and people may read them and like them, but it's pretty hard for people to steal them. And I saw something, I think you posted it, I'm gonna say about a week ago, and it said something like, if you follow my posts, you know, 95% of what you read, like that's my content. The additional 5% is what we would cover in the one-on-one coaching, and that's where it gets really personalized and tailored to you.
Yeah.
And I think that's very powerful, is that I don't think that you can ever put out too much valuable content. I think that is, you need to let people know what you know and your expertise and what's out there.
Yeah, well, first of all, my personal belief is you can't outgive the universe. Sure. The more generous you are with people, the more generous they will be with you. And so if you feel like you're holding back because somebody coached you into believing that your paywall needed to be moved out further into your content, I mean, listen, the best advice is always what's working for you. But in my opinion, that's probably a mistake. And if you're not getting people to come behind your paywall, it's probably because it's too far out. You're not bringing it close enough in. Because here's what people will suspect: if you have your paywall way out in the front of your yard, so to speak, on the curb, they suspect there's another wall inside there, Jesse. They suspect they're getting invited into the circle of constant upsell hell, where it's going to be, well, yeah, but if you really want the good stuff, you got to come into this to mastermind. If you really want to get the good stuff, you got to come and hang with me personally, you know, and it just costs you more. The entry fee gets higher and higher as you go.
Yeah. And I think you and I, just before we jumped on, we had talked about, I posted this morning about having served 1 million customers. That number is an estimate based on a lot of math that my wife had said something like, I was concerned about working with a client, and she said, oh, come on, you've done this 1 million times. And I kind of said, wait, you know what? I wonder if I have.
I actually have, yeah.
we did the math, and being conservative, the number actually came out to well over 1 million. So I don't doubt that it's over 1 million. The thing is, I think, you know, we can put out value on, you know, here's things that I learned over these 1 million customers. What I can't post on LinkedIn is how I can very focus in a very focused way apply that to you and your organization. And so hopefully people see the value and then say, yeah, let's partner. And
the closest I think you can ever get to that in a public way is a case study. Unless someone's willing to come on with you and give you 15 minutes to kind of do a little podcast interview and just be on the hot seat, which is something I'm considering adding some like extra episodes to do that for people.
Yeah.
Cause I do all these half hour, consulting things for people. And some of them have turned into clients right then and there. One lady just this last week, you know, she was wanting to get her presence back up, and she's got a lot going for her. She's very smart. She's in the scientific community. And when we got done with that, you know, got down towards the half hour, and she said, well, I want to pay you for an hour. And I said, okay, that's fine. That's cool. So we stayed on for an hour and a half, you know, and then we made a deal, and I'm, you know, getting with her twice a month over the next several months to kind of get her up to speed and get her going. And she's already got a blog. She already knows how to do a lot of the tricks, but she feels a lack of confidence because things have changed since the last time she was in the pool, you know? She's not sure if she can swim as well as she used to. So she just wanted somebody to kind of come alongside her and show her what to do. So it's not a lot of money that she's investing. It's a few hundred dollars, but it's very good money for me in the amount of time that I spend. So, you know, it ends up being a win-win for both of us. And that just came out of just doing that, just providing service. And that could have ended at the end of that 30 minutes, she could have taken the value that I provided and gone. And I've had people message me over the last few weeks and said, look, I did what you said and my traffic is 300% what it was, you know? So it's not a fluke that that's happening, right? When that starts happening for people across multiple platforms and the idea of moving towards more personal brands versus company brands, I think is huge, huge. So I wanted to ask you though about the question I put on your post. I don't know if you saw it yet.
I don't think I have.
So you basically were sharing about the 10% of companies are providing training in customer service, specific training in customer service, only 10%. Yeah. And so I asked, I said, so that means that when we observe that customer service isn't really a thing, that's an accurate observation, but there's a perception, at least in my own experience, that customer service has dropped off. So I'm curious to know, has there been a reduction in customer service training? Or are we just less polite as a society? Like, are we not teaching our children the manners and the graciousness and the willingness to serve others? And that's what we were perceiving as customer service before, was just sure. People being nice.
Sure.
Or is it an actual reduction in the training?
Yeah, I think you're definitely onto something, because I don't believe that there's less training now than there used to be. And in fact, there's probably more training now than there used to be, which means that if you are one of those organizations, about 9 out of 10 that are not doing any kind of specific customer service training, and your employees are giving good service, then that just means it's good habits that they either learned at home or with another employer. And that's something I try to tell people too, is that if you aren't training your employees, then your employers, your competitors are. They're using the habits they learned with your competitor. Maybe you're fine with that. Maybe your competitor's Amazon and you want those habits. But if you're Chick-fil-A and they learned those habits at McDonald's, you're not gonna want those habits, right?
Right. Yeah, that makes total sense. So here's a question for you. Where could a solopreneur like myself, what resources would you recommend for us to learn more about user experience and customer service?
Oh, that's a great question. There's so many great books and resources out there. I'm happy to connect with anyone. I've done some consulting on customer experience. Wrote a book a couple of years ago called Happy to Help, Lessons Learned Serving 1 Million Customers. Totally not trying to push my agenda.
It's okay that you do.
Who comes to me and says, I heard you on Mark's podcast, I'll help you for free, because I just love doing it. I'm happy.
You better put a limit on that, because here's what I'm finding out.
Okay, first 10.
I would say it's more of an individual limit. It's been my experience. If I do 30 minutes, then I'm good. And if I need to break that down to 15 at some point in the future when I'm too busy, then yeah. But if they take more of my time, then they're gonna have to pay.
Okay, I'll do a free 30-minute call with anyone who mentions your podcast.
Wow, that's pretty generous, guys. Do you hear that?
Yeah. I'm happy to do it. Like I said, happy to help. It's kind of my mantra. But I mean, there's so many places to start. A lot of what I do involves not just customer service, but kind of the behavioral science aspect of it. And so there's other training I find is usually the number one thing. It's the number one pain point that organizations face. Oftentimes people look at motivation, but you'll find it's hard for people to be motivated if employees are not trained or don't have the skills that they need. You've got kind of, what is your social setting around you? Do you work in an environment where giving or delivering great customer service is socially expected and respected? You've got, you know, your reward system. Do your reward system play into the quality of service that you're looking at giving? And then there's even, I look a lot at physical space. your physical space can make a difference in how you're interacting with your customers. And we see this a lot now, especially with COVID, where, you know, now we have, you know, dots on the floor of where customers are supposed to stand. Or, you know, I went into the gas station the other day and now they've got self-checkouts at the gas station. In a way, I think COVID has forced some innovations, but at the same time, I think it's taking some things away because we're hiding behind masks. We are, you know, now one employee can run four cash registers instead of four employees. And so we're missing out on some of those interpersonal interactions. So sorry, I got a little off track.
No, that's great. It's fine. I think this is valuable information because I think it's assumed that if you started your own business, that you already know how to serve customers. You may have skills in writing. You may have skills in graphic design, or maybe you're a woodworker or whatever. But just because you have a product or a service that's good enough to offer it for sale and get someone to pay you, it doesn't necessarily mean that you know how to handle that relationship.
Yeah.
So I think anything you can add to this conversation is probably really beneficial. So
I think the cheapest thing that you could do, and anybody could do this, is just pay attention to the user experience wherever you go. Because here's the reality of it. It used to be if I was flying somewhere, let's say I'm going to flight Delta because I'm near Salt Lake City and there's a Delta up here, I might compare pricing with United or Southwest, some of the other flights. But now when I go online and I'm booking my tickets for Delta, I'm comparing how easy that overall user experience is. I'm comparing that to, well, what's my experience like with Amazon? What's my experience like when I actually go into, you know, a retail store? Your competitors are no longer just the people within your niche market. It's everybody who's helping customers, that everybody's looking at the experience they get everywhere they go. One of the tips that I had written down was to shop yourself. And I've said this for a long time, that you should always shop yourself. You did this in one of your podcast episodes. I think it was, would I buy from me? Does that sound familiar?
Would I connect to me? Yeah, it was about networking. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and so think about that. I mean, from a standpoint of if you did not know yourself and you saw your LinkedIn profile, would you say, hey, that looks like someone I want to connect with? If you did not know yourself, if people are going to your website and they've never been there before, how easy is your website to use? A very simple thing, you know, common knowledge or that they're saying right now is on a website, especially for like a solopreneur, you should have a contact button near the top right of your screen on your website. But what you'll find time and time again is people have to scroll to the bottom. They're clicking contact. It's three clicks deep. You want to make it easy and flawless to connect with you. And
you would think, Jesse, with that information being so prevalent, and I don't know that mine's like that, but I don't use my website much. You would think that just every website template that's out there in WordPress, on Blogger, on Wix, whatever, would just have that stupid button right where the experts tell us it should be, because that's where people are scanning to. They're going to see it and they can skip a lot of headaches. What are you trying to do? It's like a curiosity approach. It's like you're heading into an Amway meeting and you don't know what's Amway. You know, you got to read the whole website before you can actually ask questions.
Yeah. And I think some people do it intentionally, thinking I want to get them into my funnel. I want to have them, you know, that I have this hook. I want them to get a white paper. They have to put in their email address and then they're part of my subscribers. But the reality is you're just building friction. I saw an ad on YouTube and I said, oh, that looks interesting. I want to learn more about that. And I clicked on it and the website that came up said, put in your email to get this free resource. It was a free resource. And I said, no, because I'm going to give you my email and you're just going to email me repeatedly.
Yep. I'm going to see you three times in my email box tomorrow.
Exactly.
And I'm going to forget to unsubscribe from you. And then I'm going to have 40 emails to delete 6 weeks from now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, just because everyone is doing it that way doesn't mean that's the best and easiest way.
No. And it doesn't mean it works.
Exactly. I mean, stand out from everybody else. And especially, you know, early on, we talked about knowing who your audience is. I think if you know who your audience is, it's a lot easier to make more kind of one-to-one contacts or one-to-few versus, you know, some of the old approaches is a one-to-many, and I hope something sticks.
Right. All right, well, we need to wrap this up, at least for the recorded portion of the conversation, because I try to keep these pretty short. So sure. Give us the best advice, like business-wise, that you've either received or that you would give to someone starting out to do what you do or, you know, get into business and be successful. What would you say is the number one thing?
Number one thing, gosh, I would just say is you be you. You are a person, you're individual. Figure out who you are and what you are and stick with that. It's been probably 15 years ago. I was fired from a job and the boss who fired me told me that I'm a rogue maverick. I was kind of young and dumb and I actually had to look up what that meant.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, whatever. And for years, I spent time thinking, like, I'll never be successful. I'm a rogue maverick. What am I going to do? I'm a maverick. I can't follow the rules. And it's really probably only been in the last 5 years or so that I've really started to embrace that and say, I'm a maverick. I don't have to play by your rules. Just because that's how everybody else does it, that's not how I'm going to do it. I will do it how I want to do it. I'll find the things that work for me, and I will do it that way. And that's where I've started to see the most success.
Yeah, and this is becoming my little one note, guys, is differentiation on personality, because it is the only secure and controllable way to differentiate yourself in any market. Well, Jesse Be Good, thank you so much, sir. Take care of those kids, and we will talk again soon.
Thanks a lot.